All right, I think that's good enough. Go ahead and get started. Today we're going to talk about Let's Encrypt and Apache Tomcat. Not actually going to encrypt Tomcat. Doesn't make any sense. I'm Chris Schultz, committer since maybe 2010 or so. Anyone on the mailing list probably recognizes my name because I type a lot. So, Apache Tomcat is a Java web application server, and it implements a handful of APIs, most of which you all will know and sometimes love, sometimes ignoring them like I do. I ignore WebSocket for the time being. Tomcat provides JMDI. You can use data sources, mail sessions, things like that. Provide HTTP, HTTP connectivity and security, or over the wire security, as Mark was discussing earlier with his TLS presentation. HTTPS is done using transport layer security. For those of you who were here last time, I'm not going to go into detail on any of the how TLS works. I'm just going to talk about the certificate issuance part of it. So I will also try to use TLS and not SSL. I will slip up, I'm sure. Briefly, for TLS, the client and the server will negotiate during their handshake which protocols and cipher suites they are going to use. They will negotiate the bulk encryption algorithm which is going to get used. That's the symmetric algorithm. And when I say bulk encryption, I mean most of the conversation is going to be done using that fast, secure algorithm on a message authentication code. And anyone who has ever looked at the cipher suites all spelled out, what you're seeing is this plus this plus this plus this plus this. So if you look at all those capital letters and sort of imagine in your mind putting them all together, that's why the cipher suites have these ridiculously long names, because the one that uses SHA-1 has to be called something different than the one that uses SHA-256 or SHA-384 or whatever it is, and those have unique named cipher suites, which is the whole thing put together. And in fact, the TLS specification has a serial number for each one of those. So for every long code you look at, there's actually a numeric identifier for that thing. So if you were to ever use Wireshark and crack open the TLS handshake, you would see the client and the server are not using these big long names. They're actually just passing small numbers back and forth. Public key infrastructure is a delegated trust model. The server, when I say produces certificate, what I really mean is actually generates a certificate. It's usually like for RSA keys, it's two very large primes multiplied together, which gives you the private and public half of your certificate. You send that to a certificate authority. That certificate authority will authenticate the server out of band using telephone or however they do their thing. And then the certificate authority signs the server certificate. When a client initiates a connection through that handshake, the server presents its certificate to the client. Client authenticates the certificate. The client trusts the certificate authority, so you start from server certificate, follow the chain of trust up to the root, and then the root is actually embedded usually in the client. And the client therefore trusts the server. So that's a 15-second version of what Mark took 30 minutes to explain earlier. If you're interested in the details, go have a look at his slides if you weren't here. So certificate authorities themselves essentially need to have universal client trust. If I set up a new certificate authority called Chris's CA and start issuing certificates, none of your web browsers will successfully connect validate that certificate, because none of your browsers know who the heck I am, and why would they trust me anyway? The certificate authority also has multiple levels of authentication, which Mark did not get into. But these two are the most common. There's domain validated, which is, do you have control over this domain name? And then there's also extended validation certificate, where they actually do much more digging into you as an entity. So not just are you truly Apache.org, but Is Apache.org a legitimate business or organization? And are the people who are requesting this certificate trusted by that organization to request certificates on its behalf and things like that? For most people, the difference you'll notice between a domain validated and an extended validation certificate is your address bar turns green if there's an EV cert. And these days, instead of seeing the, well, it depends on your browser, but whenever I look at my own website, which has an extended validation, or my company's website, which has an extended validation certificate, in the upper left, just to the left of the URL, it will actually have the name of my organization in there in green to indicate that that the organization has been validated and not just the domain. Most certificate authorities require some kind of human interaction for requests and issuance of those certificates. So they usually would send an email to make sure that everything's legit, or they would call you, depending on the level of validation that they're going to do. And they typically issue certificates for several years. I don't know if this is an absolute like law amongst CAs, but I believe that there are no CAs that will issue an EV cert for more than 2 years. Whereas it's very typical to get like a 3 or 4 or possibly even 5 year cert for a domain validated certificate. And they all charge money. And something that Mark didn't mention before is that cost. All of this crypto is completely freely available. If you have the OpenSSL command line tool, you can do all of this yourself. He mentioned that there's a script that he has written, which has been rewritten many, many times. And in fact, OpenSSL comes with a script that does this kind of thing. You can set up your own CA, you can sign your own certificates, you can do all this stuff. The only thing that you can't do is get that magical root certificate, which is deployed widely among clients. So all this crypto is completely freely available, and yet they're like, hey, why not charge $1,000 a year for our certificate? So that's no fun. So along comes this organization called Let's Encrypt, and they say, we want widespread TLS adoption. And the reasons that TLS adoption is not widespread are often financial, and it's often there is not only a financial barrier to entry, but there's a physical barrier to entry. I have to figure out how to generate an RSA key. I have to figure out how to generate a CSR from my private key. And then I need to copy and paste it to the website. And then I need to wait for a telephone call. And then they're going to send me this file. And I don't know if it's a PEM or a DER or whatever. And I need to convert it into the format that I need. And I need to configure it. And it's a giant pain in the neck, especially if you don't really know what you're doing. And of course, the reason that they wanted widespread TLS was to make the web a safer place. So they said, why are certificate authorities doing the things that they are doing? Why do we have all of these, not necessarily rules, but why is the status quo? What's the deal with the signing request and issuance? And why are we charging money for this kinds of thing? And they said, we can build a better mousetrap. So they started their own CA, and these days they have near universal trust, and I think since because of their cross-signed certificate, I think that actually means that they are universally trusted, which means that if their root cert is not in your browser, the IdenTrust's root cert is in your browser. So if you follow that chain all the way up to the Let's Encrypt root certificate, and yet that certificate is not in your in your browser's trust store, in your operating system's trust store, the IdenTrust will be there. So IdenTrust, I think, very generously cross-signed their certificate to bridge the gap between zero trust and full trust by the browsers. Dan?
So are you saying the Let's Encrypt CA is not self-signed then? It's signed by?
It's both, actually.
How?
Anyone can sign anyone's cert. I mean, I could sign VeriSign's root cert if I really wanted to, but nobody gives a crap.
Yes, but how does the chain of trust split?
When you provide a certificate chain from your server, you supply the chain you
That's
prefer.
Right. Okay, got it.
So are there any browsers that don't have the IDEN trust?
I believe they all have them and have had them for quite a while. It would be kind of like VeriSign or Symantec having signed it as well. It's just IDEN Trust happened to be the one that volunteered to do it.
Some of it, I don't speak one.
I'm sorry?
Some of it.
Okay, yeah. I mean, many browsers now have Let's Encrypt baked in. I think everybody is on the path to doing it, even if they don't have it. It's a time-consuming process to go from it's not in the root store to, okay, it's now in the root store. So it's basically like the political and, just basically political wheels and things like that that need to turn in order to get that done. They have done things a little bit differently than the other CAs. They questioned why the CAs were behaving that way, and they decided to behave differently. They provide only a single level of authentication, and there doesn't seem to be any indication that they're going to change that. It's all domain validated, so you can't get an EV cert from Let's Encrypt. They require automated interaction. There's no, like, you can't log into a website and click through and copy and paste your CSR. You can't do any of that stuff. You need to use an automated tool. The EFF has a tool called CertBot, which is what all my examples do here. There's a bunch of other ones that have either more or fewer features. And their certificates are always valid. I said 60 days. It's actually 90 days. But they recommend that you actually renew your certificate every 60 days just in case there's a problem. You don't want on day 89 to ask for a renewal and it fails and then you have to scramble to figure out what's going on. And it's absolutely free. So they don't intend to replace the existing certificate authorities. This isn't like them leveling an attack on VeriSign and Symantec and Thought and whoever else. They basically are fitting a specific niche. So they don't do EV. It's only for websites. They don't do email or code signing certificates or anything like that. And they don't do wildcards. So if you want any of these things, you're going to have to pay a real CA, or rather a traditional CA. You can use subject alternative names, which is actually really nice. If you don't work hard, you will usually end up with one or two automatically without even recognizing it. So if you never bother looking at your cert, you might not notice this. But if you want to protect, let's say, you know, chris.com, and you ask Let's Encrypt for a certificate for www.chris.com, they'll give you SANS for www.chris.com and plain old chris.com. So I don't know if anybody's ever set up a TLS website before and you've forgotten to do both, and when someone types in chris.com, they get an error that says, oh, we got a certificate and it's for www.chris.com. This looks shady. So you don't have to really worry about that anymore with Let's Encrypt, which is nice.
There's a limit on those two, right? SANS?
I'm sure that there's a technical limit inside the...
the spec, I thought Let's Encrypt had a smaller subset.
They might. I don't know the details on that, but I know you can...
What kind of people?
On the SANS, on the number of SANS that you can have.
Actually, it's around the... We issued maybe a million certificates with them so far, so...
No, but in a specific certificate, can you ask for a million SANS?
Yeah, 600.
Ah, SANS.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably a relatively reasonable number.
Yeah, depending on your use case.
Yeah, our use case is...
Where are you? Oh, Comcast. I thought you were going to say WordPress and you're like... okay, so here's the plan. One time we're going to request a certificate from Let's Encrypt. That's the initial issuance. And then periodically we are going to request a certificate renewal. And again, these are all automated requests. So there's a little command line utility. You just type certbot renew and it goes, okay, you're good. And then we're going to deploy the new certificate into Tomcat. So that's what this whole presentation is about. And then the fight you have to go through to get it all to work. Because I'll mention it now. Certbot from EFF already supports configuration and everything for HTTPD. So if you have an HTTPD installation and you download the Certbot script and you run it and say, I've got HTTPD and I can give you write access to the config files, it will reconfigure HTTPD, it will request the cert, receive the issued cert, install it, and restart HTTPD for you with virtually no interaction on your part. That's what I'm hoping to get to with Tomcat. So requesting a certificate from Let's Encrypt is pretty easy. I'm going to use the certbot tool, which I mentioned earlier. Periodically requesting a renewal is easy, cron plus certbot. And then installing the new certificate into Tomcat is where we kind of go, huh, how precisely are we going to do that? So there's a couple of reasons why this is a pain in the neck. Let's Encrypt, in order to validate that you are who you say you are, doesn't want you listening to weird ports. Because if you have non-root access to a machine, you can bind to port 65534 or whatever, well, probably 16, lower than that. You can have a non-privileged port, and if you wanted Let's Encrypt to do a domain authentication against that, you could then steal that. And I think that's one of the many problems that... What was the certificate authority that went down in flames that was trying to do freeze? Not Symantec. They're going down now. It's called freessl.com or something like that. They tried to compete with Let's Encrypt and they were really sloppy with it. And that's one of the things they allowed was any port number. Yeah. So Tomcat doesn't usually bind to port 80. We tell people all the time, do not run Tomcat as root. And sometimes getting it to bind to port 80 one way or another is a little bit tricky. Tomcat, and this is this was written for a 8.0 audience. So Tomcat doesn't always use Java key stores, and not anymore sometimes. Certbot generally produces just plain old PEM files, so that's a hurdle we'll have to get around. And Tomcat has no graceful reload. So if you want to pick up a certificate change or any modification to your configuration, the easiest thing to do is just to bring down the whole server and then bring it back up again, which, depending on your application, may require a lot of downtime. So we can get around some of these things. We can do port binding using JSVC, which you run that as a privileged process. It binds to the port, it drops privileges, and then allows Tomcat to continue with its configuration. Or you can use IP tables or something like that, which I'll get into in a minute. Using Java key stores, what's great is you can import a PEM file. That's a hurdle which is fixable. And Tomcat reloads can be done with a short downtime. There is a caveat that in-flight requests are going to be canceled, which is something that I'll talk about a little bit later. So IP tables is more than just a firewall. You can actually route and forward. And there are a couple of commands to redirect port 80 to port 8080, which is the typical port number that Tomcat will bind to for a non-TLS connection. So here's the magic sauce for IP tables. This is what you need to do. You may require these filters as well. These slides will be online if you need this. It's not really worth reading specifically, but you need to route the ports forward and route the ports backward for both. I went ahead and did both of these. I believe you need both because I think certbot, or rather Let's Encrypt, verifies both of them. So pre-installation of certificate and then post-installation. And here's the actual command that you need. So this is the concept and this is the actual implementation. And again, you also might need to set them for forwarding. So let's get that first Let's Encrypt certificate. If your server is available on the public internet, or at least routable, and you are listening on port 80, that command will get you a cert. Totally free, signed legitimately by a CA that is globally trusted. So reconfiguring Tomcat's TLS takes a little bit of work. So I decided to start playing around with a self-signed certificate instead of hammering Let's Encrypt over and over again and getting banned, which actually happened once to me. They only get banned for like an hour or something, but it's still inconvenient when you're trying to get it done. So this is a typical command to generate a new self-signed, because that always happens when you use KeyTool, a new self-signed certificate in a new Java key store. I used the hostname localhost, and the organizational unit was KeyStore1, just so that I could tell the difference between them. Now I'm going to generate a second key store using the exact same command with two exceptions. Number one, I gave a different org unit, and number two, I set a different file name, so I now have two files on the disk. I'll flip back and forth. One and two, one and two. And now what I'll do is I will symlink my key store number one to the key store, which I will then configure here in Tomcat. The start Tomcat, verify my connection. This little OpenSSL command will dump out the certificate that that the server is presenting when the connection is made, and then you can take a look at it and verify that it has the right organization. So that'll show you which certificate is actually being presented, whether it's org 1 versus org 2.
Why do you know it's a certificate?
Sorry?
Why do you when it's set client?
Ah, yes, it does, and it really heavily depends on your version of OpenSSL. Recent versions of Tomcat will not configure SSL version 3 at all, which means it will only accept a TLS handshake.
Yeah,
OpenSSL by default attempts an SSL 3 handshake and will fail if only TLS 1 is available. So you may or may not need this depending on a handful of factors. So, test reconfiguring. Remove the symlink. Create a new symlink, and now what do? If I shut down Tomcat all the way, which includes your application, and I start it back up again, I will get the intended result. I will now have sort of deployed my new certificate on the server, but I'd really rather not take down the application and the whole JVM. So what are my options? And Dan, what did you say yesterday? Tickle the connector via JMX? Tickle the connector via JMX. So, Tomcat exposes all these connectors via JMX. If you fire up JVisual VM, like I did this morning to take this screenshot, you'll find the connectors in there, right underneath Catalina. And all these connectors are the ones that I have configured here in my test server. And the connectors via JMX have these two, they have more than this, but there is a stop and there is a start operation that you can perform on them. So if all we want to do is reload the TLS configuration, we just bounce the connector. Connect Tomcat via JMX, navigate to the proper connector, which in my case is this 8443 connector. Click stop, wait a second, click start. Verify the connection, same command, it should say org2. And the reason that I've set this up here is not necessarily so you can follow my stream of consciousness as I went through testing these things. It's so that you can verify that if you want to do this, you have your server set up, it's behaving as you expect it to before you start hitting Let's Encrypt and asking them for certificates every few minutes. So manual deployment is no fun. No one's going to use Visual VM in production. Nobody's going to do this on their cluster of 500 servers, clicking through all of these things. And even if you convince yourself that one time you were willing to do this, you're not going to do it every 8 weeks. So automation is absolutely required. So For automation, we need to renew the certificate using CertBot, build a new key store using OpenSSL and KeyTool, and bounce Tomcat's connector. So renewing with Let's Encrypt is super easy. CertBot renew, done. Tick. That's a one-liner in a shell script. Building the new Java key store, and I chose to build a new key store rather than trying to augment an existing one. Anytime I do anything with a Java key store, which I hate Java key stores, I'm always worried that I'm going to break it irreparably. So I always create a backup copy before I work on it. And so if I want a new cert or a new key or anything like that, I always just push the old one out of the way and keep it, and I create a new one from scratch. After doing this renewal here, what you end up with on the disk is a new server key and a new signed certificate and the Let's Encrypt intermediate certificate, which may or may not need to be updated. I assume that it needs to be updated in each case, so I always build everything from scratch. So the only way to get a private key that you have in your hand into a Java key store is to actually put it in a different format first and then import that whole thing into the Java key store. So the first thing I do is I use OpenSSL to make a PKCS12 file, wrapping the key, the cert, and the chain all into one package. And then I ask Java key store, KeyTool, to import that whole thing and just convert it straight over into a Java key store. I'm irritated that both of these steps are necessary, but they're actually not that hard to do, and if it's a script, who cares? So, new key store, celebrate. Bouncing Tomcat's connector without clicking takes a little bit of know-how, and anyone who's seen a presentation of mine over the last few years knows that I always run to the JMX proxy servlet, because I like JMX, I like the things that you can do through the MX beans. JMX is a mess, but there's so much good stuff that you can get to through it, and it's actually really easy to plug in your own things from your own application or for the application server to expose all of these operations and attributes and things like that. But JMX as a protocol is a pain in the neck, and you have to spin up a JVM and all that kind of stuff. So the JMX proxy servlet allows an HTTP request to come in with some magic stuff, and there's documentation in the Tomcat user's guide and configuration guide for how to talk to the JMX proxy servlet. But the important things that you need to know are that you need to enable the manager application and configure a realm, please. Make sure that it's walled off from wherever it needs to be walled off from, so that you're only accepting connections from localhost or 10.whatever or however you want to do your management. And then don't forget to configure a second connector for this purpose, because you don't want to send a command in that says bounce the connector, and while the connector is bouncing, you drop your connection and it either fails or something happens and it just doesn't complete what you want to do. So I highly recommend an out-of-band connector, and if you're doing it on localhost, that's easy, just insecure connector, and you're on your way. So here's the magic sauce to stop the connector from the command line. Again, slides online. Basically what we're telling Tomcat to do is this, unfortunately it's URL encoded, but we're saying grab the connector whose port number is that, and I'd like you to execute the stop operation. And then you just do the exact same thing with the start operation. Yeah, Steve.
So what's when you're doing this, what happens to Tomcat? Like, what does a user get if they try to hit that connector port? They get a 404, or does it queue up and process later?
There's
still queue threads available, right?
I'll get to that in a second. So he has asked what happens to requests that are coming in between the moment that you issue this command and the moment that you issue this command. And the bad news is it's not good, but I'll get to it in a second. So scripting will set you free. Here is essentially the script that will set you free. There's a lot of error handling and checking of things that are in the actual script that you can get that will be along with the slides online. But this is essentially exactly what I walked through here. And so you just need these five commands and you're good to go. I can't remember, I'm almost certain that I put a wait in here between these two. because I don't know if Tomcat will respond to the stop before the stop actually happens.
It's good indeed to make a connection to itself in order to close the socket, the acceptor socket correctly. So that takes a while. So I think when you pick that, and it returns, but it's going to execute the command, but the command itself is making a connection.
So there's a little bit of wait time that you might need.
It's nothing, but if you have a script and you have the two, one after the other, the second one is going to
be fine. Okay, I'll make sure that my script has either a wait in there or at least a note that you might need a wait.
Once alone is probably more than enough.
Okay. So here are some challenges, and this is what Steve was asking earlier, is between start and between stop and start, Tomcat is not accepting any requests. I will have to check whether they queue up. My guess is no.
Yeah, they're part of the. I think the threads are part of the connector.
The connector has. Yeah, the connector has actually unbound from the port, so you will get port unreachable ICMP response or something obnoxious like that. Also, stopping the connector immediately terminates all in-use connections. So, if you have a long-running request that has come in that's being served over a connection, Tomcat and your application will probably continue processing it, but the client is never going to get a response.
So if you have something in front, like an F5 load balancing or HTTPD, you could take that server out and put it back in. That might
absolutely
be the better result.
You could.
Just read the whole server.
You could almost be smarter about it, too, and just do a retry, right? So if you have a proxy in front of it, it hits the one that's down, it's just going to go to another one of the JVM.
It takes care of new connections.
Yeah, you're fine with
that.
Correct. My recommendation is, so I'll get to this a little bit later. I am doing this presentation because I think it's a good idea, especially if you have like a one box wonder that just has a Tomcat running on it. But honestly, if you're going to be running Tomcat at any kind of reasonably large installation, you really need a reverse proxy, and that's where you should be terminating SSL. You shouldn't need any of this junk. You should be using Let's Encrypt with your cert out at the reverse proxy. So what about graceful reinitialization, where we do keep all of the in-flight connections going? It turns out that the SSL engine, and I'm really sorry that Mark isn't here to either yes or no me here, because he would know down at the very low level whether this is true, or exactly what I say is true. The SSL engine can definitely be swapped out from a configured running connector. It will only affect the connections that are established after that SSL engine has been replaced. Unfortunately, it requires the tracking of those in-flight connections because the SSL engines need to be cleanly shut down. I know for a fact that the OpenSSL engine has a lot of resources that are tied up with it. And so if you're using either NIO with SSL, NIO with OpenSSL, or you are using the APR connector, shutting down this engine, or rather not shutting down this engine, represents a significant possibility for a memory leak. And I think for the JSSE, the pure Java engines, if we just let them go, they will probably, their finalizers or whatever, will probably release that memory. I have to check on that. Unfortunately, tracking those SSL engine usages can be a little bit complicated. It's fairly straightforward if you're doing traditional request response HTTP 1 style things. You know, the request comes in. increment an atomic counter. The request is done, decrement the atomic counter. Okay, no problem. But when you start doing things like servlet, 3-async, HTTP2, and I could have sworn I put this in here, but I apparently didn't. WebSocket can be a little bit tricky too, because both HTTP2 and WebSocket allow communications that, or connections to be used longer than just a single request response. So even if the request is not in flight, the connection might still be in use. Keep alives are another reason, another similar issue where the connection appears to be not in use, but in fact it is in use. So basically we have to add reference counting to the SSL engine management. And that adds overhead, and that will add overhead to every request, not just, actually, maybe not every request. It will add overhead to every connection setup and a connection teardown. So these future solutions, I think we'll definitely add reference counting for SSL engines so that we can do this, because the benefits of being able to reconfigure SSL on the fly are quite high. And make it configurable so that only people who need this kind of management will incur any of that overhead. So being able to gracefully reconfigure the TLS configuration actually allows us to do some things that we've wanted to do for a while. There are some open enhancement requests, for example, to have Tomcat reload the certificate revocation list, if you think that's actually a technique that really works. It allows you to reconfigure your protocols or your cipher suites. I'm not entirely sure why you might want to do this, but it might be in the middle of the day and you've decided, oh my God, triple DES should absolutely not be used starting right this moment and I can't bring my service down. Well, this would allow you to do that kind of thing. You could also add another certificate. If you wanted to throw in an elliptic curve certificate to a running server, you could do that kind of thing. Basically, anything that's configured with the SSL engine, you would be able to alter at runtime. So this should work for all connector types, NIO, NIO2, and APR. I didn't mention BIO, but Tomcat 8 still has BIO in it. There's no reason why that shouldn't work for BIO as well. And most of these future solutions, oh, that's why I said that, because we'll probably go into Tomcat 9 and spend some time kicking it around before we backport it to 8.5. Probably not going to make it back to 8.0, so BIO is not really relevant. So to sum it all up, Let's Encrypt provides free as in beer certs. They require automation, and honestly, you should require automation too. I had a good conversation during the bar camp about configuration management, and this sort of goes along with it. If you have to manually handle your certificates, that's a part of your infrastructure that you're manually handling, and you can make mistakes, so automating it is a good thing. Tomcat has some challenges. All of them are possible to overcome. And there are solutions available now, as I presented here. And they will improve over time, mostly with the ability to do a graceful restart. So that's it, short and sweet. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah?
Can you use CertBot to encrypt HTTPD and then slide that through the AJP connector into Tomcat? So you could skip all of the Java key store madness and just use the string management.
So are you asking if Tomcat could be used to issue the certificate but then give the cert to HTTPD?
No, maybe just issue it through HTTPD.
Yep.
CertBot pulls it down and throws it in, etc.pki or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you get an encrypted connection through the browser, and then AJP forwards that over to Tomcat.
Oh. Oh, yeah, I misunderstood. Absolutely. At that point, Tomcat is not really involved in the TLS at all. So you would run certbot and just tell it to put the cert into HTTPD. And then you have unencrypted communication between HTTPD and Tomcat.
Could you encrypt that communication?
Can you encrypt it? Use S-Tunnel. That's the answer.
S-Tunnel?
Yep. If you want to use AJP specifically, then between your reverse proxy, which is HTTPD, and Tomcat, you should use S-Tunnel, or a VPN, but that's like so 1980. You could also just switch your protocol. There's only a little bit of an advantage to using AJP as your proxy protocol. And the only reason that it's, the only reason those advantages exist are because of the history of ModJK, for instance, versus ModProxy, and the defaults that you get. If you set up ModJK, by default, it sends over a lot of information that ModProxy will not send over by default, but they can be configured to behave exactly the same. And when I say ModProxy, I mean ModProxy HTTP, not ModProxy AJP. So if you want to use TLS between your reverse proxy and Tomcat, use mod proxy HTTP and configure TLS that way.
And tomorrow morning, efficient.
Yeah, so Jean-Frédéric is going to be talking tomorrow about many things, among them comparison between the options that you have for proxy connections. Did I see a question over here? Nope. Okay.
So are any of these solutions about the RESTful redeployment of certificates available in bits today? Or?
No, not the graceful ones. The hard stop and start, that will work today. I haven't written any code to do any of that SSL replacement, that SSL engine replacement on the fly. That's something that I was actually hoping to talk to Mark and any other committers who have anything to say about it during this conference to kind of get that started.
We're kind of really interested in that. Today we reload the SSL context for every request.
I'm sorry?
We reload the SSL context for every request.
For every request? What does your load look like?
It's not much, so it's fine. But we can see the difference in, you know, the response times. It's very good.
Okay. Yeah. So I would recommend come to the Tomcat meetup. I think I keep saying this to everybody who asks me. We're going to try to schedule that like in the next 30 minutes. But I think maybe after the next presentation, or maybe even after this one, we'll try to schedule that. When we do, it'll probably be, the meetup will probably be tomorrow night. I'm going to propose 6 o'clock. So come to the meetup and we'll talk about that, maybe while we're drinking rather than at a round table. Yeah, next.
If you skip back a few slides to all the stuff with the building Java key store.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me, while it is fiddly, that's the sort of thing that other Java-based tools might need to work with. And would it be worth getting all of that lot into Certbot so that Certbot can generate JKS things?
Yes.
And then all of the other Java ecosystem gets rid of those top three lines of...
Yep. So one of the things that I said, I sort of said angrily was, you shouldn't be doing any of this anyway. You should do it at your reverse proxy. What I want is for certbot to contain, if not all of this, at least this, or rather this, because it obviously already includes this. So if I can ask certbot, give me a renewal, and by the way, I would like you to please package up my returning issued certificate in a Java key store, that would be lovely. It would cut out one third of the slides of this presentation. Anyone else?
But actually, stop on the key tools, and it might be a bit challenging. Because what you need to change is just so you get
When you do a renewal with Let's Encrypt, you always generate a new key.
Okay.
Or at least certbot does, and that's the recommendation of both the EFF and Let's Encrypt. Yeah. Theoretically, you could use the same key, but why not generate a new key? Because if the key's been compromised, they want the certificate rollover to include a key rollover as well. Anyone? All right, thanks a lot.